And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, "Well, how did I get here?" Welcome to Night Vale.
Oh, these poor people.
All right, it's an official Guide to Disney Dish podcast with Les Testa and Jim Hill. I thought I'd do a little bit of a twist up on the opening there. Jim and I are here. Welcome back. It's been a while, Jim.
It has been a while, but man, we're back with some news.
All right, so let's jump right in. So everyone's least favorite park, by everyone I mean me, is Disney's Hollywood Studios. It really hasn't been touched in forever, Jim, right? And we know that the Animal Kingdom's got all kinds of new stuff. The Magic Kingdom obviously just finished a huge refurbishment. Over on the other side of town, Universal's adding stuff left and right to both IOA and to the Universal Studios Florida. But the Hollywood Studios was sort of the odd person out, except for this latest Frozen set of things. But we hear there's more, right?
Oh, yes. All right. In fact, let me put this in terms that pop culture fans will appreciate. The Eye of Sauron has turned on the studio after years and years and years of neglect. It's finally going to happen, folks. I have to caution you, it's not necessarily going to happen in the way that Disney fans are going to like. First of all, one of the things that just need to understand right off the bat is that the whole conceit of this being a park where movies and television shows are made, that's going away.
Yeah, well, that hasn't really been true for years now, right?
Well, this is...
I mean, Jim Varney's been dead for a long time, and he did the last big.
This is true, but this is, I mean... What this means is that they've decided to turn this into a theme park. All right.
Right.
And you have to understand that in the fanboy world, that means e-tickets. And that's not what's happening here. What you need to be aware of is that it's going to be sort of a DCA take, as in you're going to get flat rides, you're going to get spinners, you're going to get B tickets, C tickets, and E tickets. That
this is the long term plan.
This is the long term plan. It's
really
yes, as in that.
I was expecting you to lead with Star Wars Land, Jim.
Well, interesting. Star Wars is actually a component of this, but this is Star Wars is like a piece of what they're going to do. I'd take for example Pixar Place. Okay.
Okay, so back behind the cinema, back behind the big hat.
Okay. One of the things they've just realized is that, they spent all that money to make that area look like the Pixar campus, even aping the brickwork of the old Del Monte plant.
By the way, like 8 people in the world have seen, but okay, go ahead.
That's it exactly.
Is that really?
it's just one of these things where it's like, why are we spending money referencing things that people don't get? All right, we created this tight, ridiculous corridor that nobody, that the 5 people from Emeryville get, that no one in Orlando gets.
Yeah, no.
So it's like, look, let's make this a theme park. Let's make this operational. Let's step away from the dark brick and the narrowness. And let's go with that. At the same time, though, one of the things really, honestly, that kind of drove the bus on this decision was the Frozen event. The Frozen event coming on the heels of Star Wars weekends. And it was just the notion of – they just took a cold-blooded look when they had so many people trying to get into that park and how unwalkable, unworkable that park is. And it was just – it was a come-to-Jesus moment.
It really is hard to walk, and if you think about it, it's a series of cul-de-sacs, right? I mean,
that's it exactly.
The Animation Courtyard,
mm-hmm.
Sunset Boulevard,
yep,
right. You've got, I guess Lights, Motor, Action is sort of a cul-de-sac kind of thing. But really, it only really flows around the middle part from maybe Echo Lake kind of flows into sort of Pixar Place and that ABC Commissary lane. But that lane that goes, you know, in front of ABC Commissary, other than getting you from sci-fi to the commissary to the hat, it really doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just these two events back-to-back and the notion that they're also going to do a villain hard ticket. And it's like, look, you know, we have to do this right. That, and at the same time, the awareness of what the earnings potential, it's so weird. It was actually on the backs of Anna and Elsa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that they realized that, God, we have been leaving money on the table. I mean, for example, right now, any night that they're doing a Sorcery in the Sky, that the Frozen-themed fireworks,
mm-hmm.
it's having a negative impact on Epcot. They've actually seen such a drop in numbers at Epcot on any night that there's a Frozen fireworks show.
Really?
Yeah.
People are like, oh, let's bail out of here. We've seen Illuminations a million times.
And in fact, that's the other great little bit of news here. Steve Davidson is, in fact, working on a new show for the Lagoon at Epcot.
Really?
I got this confirmed this past weekend. Mind you, again, it being, you know, the type of show that Steve Davidson does, it means that there'll be like a 10-foot wide space that people can watch the show and it'll be great. I'm joking. Steve does great shows. They just tend to be very nice from one specific angle. But it's legit. It's happening. This is not a drill, folks.
Time frame?
As early as 18 months, okay. Possibly. Again, part of the problem here, of course, is that, you've got to go out and actually, purchase the technology to do this and, you know, solidify a concept,
Eight months could be like 2016.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So just keep that in mind. Studio, I have to caution people here. This is going to take a number of years to do. And yes, Star Wars will be the first component. All right. And at the same time, there's kind of a do no harm aspect to, what they're going to do with the studio. So the Osborne Lights or whatever the Osborne Lights is going to be called in a year or two.
All right.
There's a television show that Disney or ABC has begun doing called The Great Christmas Light Fight.
Right, you mentioned this last year, yeah.
Yeah, and this is going to become a component of the Osborne Lights. Part of the problem here is that when the patriarch of the Osborne family died, he left the family very, very, very heavily in debt, and they had to auction off a lot of the families. I mean, they had one of the great Disneyana collections of the world. They had cars, fur coats, everything. Huh. And supposedly one of the things that went during this period is Disney approached the family and bought the rights, full-on rights. So, they may be stripping the Osborne name off of this and bringing in this Christmas Light Fight name. I mean, they've been doing some survey work, again, because it's, Disney doesn't name things randomly. There'll be focus groups. There'll be, point, so many people like the Jennings Osborne story and like going hunting for the purple cat.
Yeah, it's kind of a Christmas story connection. It's a backstory that they don't have to make up.
I agree. But at the same time, just the notion is that, I won't lie to you, Len. They've been doing brand testing on a Frozen Winter Wonderland name for back there.
Yeah, I'd be okay, too. I'd be okay with that. I mean, it's fine. As long as they don't, I guess I'd be okay with it.
So,
the Great Christmas Light Fight. That's going to be a series or a movie?
It's a series. It's a reality series. In fact, what's so interesting is it did well enough last year that they've actually done already a spinoff. It'll start in late September or October, but it's the Great Halloween Fright Fight, and it's about people who decorate their houses for Halloween. But yeah, this is coming right over the horizon. And again, just you know, so everyone kind of keep their ears to the ground because Disney will be doing survey work about possibly changing out the Osborne family name. And again, sadly, don't get me wrong, I like what Frozen has done, you know, but at the same time, it seems to be everywhere now. And I mean, just this past week, Disney decided to extend, you know, the Frozen thing at the studio just because of, you know, you can't look at these numbers and not want them to keep going.
Right.
So they're going to extend for another month, and there's actually some talk about running this right up until the hard ticket for Halloween.
The Frozen thing?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if it doesn't go all the way to Christmas, and I've heard from somebody on the inside that they've been approached about that possibility. So,
well, what's funny about that is that the people who do the Christmas parade for the park are like, "Can we have our floats back?"
Yeah, no. You know? Like, hey, here's an idea.
You know, it's like, here, have some money, make some new floats. So yeah, they are again. At the same time, I'm sure you've heard about what's going on FastPass-wise for Maelstrom, that it looks like...
yeah, that's going to close,
That's, you know, again, not January.
They moved it up. It's interesting because it's going to close, but just a couple of days before the new fiscal year starts for Disney. I figured that wasn't a coincidence.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But
October 1st was the fiscal year, and end of September is when...
Here's the big one. All right. Well, actually, there's two big ones. One is that everyone's sort of heard about the Ratatouille ride
in
Paris. I can tell you the ride technology is coming to the studio. I can't tell you the theming. So that's part of, you know, the redo. And again, not to connect the dots here, but the Great Movie Ride, after all these years, is going away.
Really?
Yep.
So when you say going away, you mean it's not going to be updated with new movies?
No.
This is the end of the Great Movie Ride.
This is something very cool going in there. But the ride as we know it is going away.
And do you have a timeline for that?
Well, part of this, you know... you have to understand that Avatar and Rivers of Light and that sort of thing has to get out the door, because the changes that they're going to be making to the studio are large, and you're going to have places to send people during this period when the studio is just wall-to-wall construction fences. So, you know, it's actually on the backside of that. You will see some work begin. You know, some of the Star Wars stuff will probably begin as early as January of this year.
Really?
Well, part of that is because Disney got a clue about what Universal is up to, and it's like, this is not a drill.
Yeah, right. No. I mean,
No. They just found out, for example, everyone knows about Kong. I mean, the Kong Terror of Skull Island.
There's more after that, though.
Hmm?
There's more
yes.
after that.
There's at least two other rides coming, or two things coming this year they haven't even talked about yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's amazing about Universal. That coupled with the fact that the water park, the long rumored water park, Lynn, it's coming.
Yeah.
All right.
Another hotel or two.
Well, the thing is, hotels coming first. Yeah. Water park, a water park to make. If you took Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach and ram them together, it's still not going to be the Universal Water Park.
Wow.
They're not kidding. It's going to be part of the 840-acre parcel thing that the campus that they have over there. It's not a question of, you know, them redoing Wet n' Wild or that sort of thing. I mean, it's right there. That's yet another piece of we're going to be a destination resort.
Wow.
And, you know, so it just, I mean, don't get me wrong. Disney is still out in front by a ridiculous amount. They're still the number one, you know, destination resort in this market. But on the other hand, Disney is now looking at Universal's margins, you know, and the amount of money that they're making compared to what Disney's making. And it's like, we got to step up our game.
Well, not only that, too. I mean, but it's entirely possible that, you know, until 2017 or so, Universal and IOA could be parks number 3 and 4 out of the top 10 instead of 5 and 6.
No, and that is Disney's concern. So that's one of the reasons why, again, what's interesting when you talk with these folks and mention the DCA redo, they don't want to use that phrase. They really are. Again, it's funny that when you talk with the people at Disney, they'll do things like right now. In fact, this story just fascinated me. They have meetings, for example, when they're designing rides for Shanghai, where they have a meeting about the Yeti problem. All right, that's literally the phrase they use. This is what the meeting's about.
It's not that we're infested with the Yeti, but we've got this technology. It worked once for 6 months.
Well, but that's the thing. It's they never want to be in a situation again where, you know, they build a central figure in an attraction and it breaks down and there's no way to fix it. So it's like going forward, you know, for example, a lot of the stuff that's being built for Shanghai, you know, and there's some really impressive figures that they're going to debut over there. Mm-hmm. They're building in access panels, catwalks, technicians can get into things and fix them and access them. So we're never going to have this problem again. And this actually carries over, for example, to the floating mountains for Pandora. Yeah, the land of Avatar. And in fact, by the way, the people who have seen the test footage for the mountains, the floating mountains, said this is going to be mind-blowing. This is one of the things you're going to walk into the land and you're going to look up, and it's like it's forced perspective, but at the same time, these things are floating. And it's like, how are they doing that?
And they're really going to do it.
They're really going to do it. They, and more to the point, this is going to be – at night, this is going to be – the most beautiful land you've ever wandered through. Mind you, there isn't going to be a blue light gel available in the continental United States.
Yeah, right after that.
But, you know, I mean, but this is, it's going to be amazing. But yeah, this is, you know, it's a very interesting moment because that Disney, you know, if you talk with people in Imagineering, they talk about there's never been a moment like this it's been years since there's been this sort of feeling in the building that it's like, okay, you know, we have our mojo back, on the heels of the success of Mystic Manor, for Hong Kong Disneyland, and that followed by the Ratatouille ride, it's just the whole notion of, okay, you know, here's Diagon Alley. Okay. We can top that. We can beat that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's got to be backed up with money.
Yeah,
and, you know, just it, and it seems like there has just been there's been a change at the top. In fact, it's a lot of people are now pointing to the fact that Iger has extended his contract with Disney. Remember, he was supposed to walk out the door June of next year. And he's actually
there's no talk of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and supposedly he wants to hang on long enough now to see Pandora open.
So at least 2017.
Yeah, and, you know, just because there's a belief that when that opened, jaws are going to drop, and that so he can go out on top. And at the same time, there will be enough of the components of the studio that will come online. That people will recognize, like, wow, Disney's really fixing this park. But again, from a fanboy point of view, when they roll out the list of attractions that are going to go into this, there's going to be some pushback because a lot of it is going to be things like spinners and B tickets and C tickets and that sort of thing. That's deliberate. It's just the notion of, if you're going to make this park someplace that people can stay all day, you have to change up, freshen up the inventory, and at the same time put experiences in that the whole family can do.
Yeah, it's one of the problems with Rock and Roller Coaster and Tower of Terror is the height requirements, and that's why Toy Story is so popular.
There you go.
All right, so let's start at the beginning of the park, and let's tell me what's going to change and when.
The weird thing is throughout this whole conversation, everyone asks about the hat, and the problem is that the hat and its stage component. I mean, the fact that, you know, people walk straight into the park, and this is where they do the Star Wars, you know, presentation. This is where they do the villains thing.
Right. There's an actual live stage there where they do New Year's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, depending on who you talk to, that's going to stay in some form. You know, that I mean, the vista that goes down that ends with the Chinese theater may be unchanged. I mean, there's been that's a real vocal part of this change out, the belief that we, you know, we need to improve the view. But at the same time, it's just sort of like, look, we need a place in this park where people can gather and do, you know, these communal shows, which have been very popular.
Mm-hmm.
So, right now, that's a magic eight ball moment. Okay. Depending on who wins this battle, the hat goes away, or the hat and the stage change stays, but it gets upgraded. To the left.
So hold on, real quick. So Hollywood Boulevard, we're talking about, right? Where the
Hollywood Boulevard pretty much stays the same.
Okay, so the theming doesn't change.
1940s
Hollywood, 1930s Hollywood.
Well, that part of it works. I mean, as a retail entertainment corridor with the Streetmosphere folks, that works.
Okay, great.
Same thing with Sunset Boulevard. What may change out there, though, Beauty and the Beast is obviously incredibly elderly at this point. Mm-hmm. But the flip side is that you know, there's a live-action Beauty and the Beast musical now making its way through development at Disney.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that there's considerable pushback to the effect of, if we pull that show out and then the live action stage or movie version comes out and is a hit again,
then we've got nothing.
Yeah. So there's been multiple conversations about a version of Tangled going in there.
That kind of makes sense.
A half hour cut down version. But, you know, again, that's on the entertainment side of it, on the heels of the success of Frozen, everything right now from an entertainment point of view is being reviewed, because it's just sort of like they have never seen numbers and reactions like this compared to the Frozen event. And it's just sort of the notion of, all right, so, you know, and the irony of this, of course, is that you have the Maelstrom project. And you know, that's still going forward. You know, you'll still have a Frozen ride in Epcot because they need it.
Yeah. It'll be Epcot's thing for, what, is that an 18-month thing too?
Yeah. That's in fact, that's what's interesting about jumping the start to from January to September. October 1st.
Yeah.
You know, that they shut that down. That means that gets open that much earlier in calendar 2016. Which, you know, if you work in the math, that's, what is it, the 45th anniversary of the resort?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, that factors into these decisions as well.
Well, it gives them something, something to tout earlier, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. So Sunset Boulevard, Beauty and the Beast, I'm surprised they didn't, or it might be Tangled, but I'm surprised they didn't do the Frozen thing there. I guess, but it's a sort of a corner of the park, and you really want people to be in the middle of the park where that stage is for retail and dining, don't you?
Well, there's that. Mm. There's that. Okay. That coupled with the fact that, you know, it's weird. There's a lot of entertainment. I mean, if you think about it, you've got that theater backing up against
Fantasmic.
And that's always been kind of a problem, particularly when Beast will dump, just as you've got people lined up to get into Fantasmic.
Oh, yeah, the last Beauty and the Beast show of the night will, yes. You could feel the Earth's crust tilt in when those people are standing there.
And that's, again, one of the things to stress about this change out is about fixing this park.
Yeah, okay.
You know, just the whole notion of, you know, again, for example, I think the irony of this whole thing is the one thing that will probably stay in place the way it's always been is the studio backlot, the Streets of America. That, mostly, again, on the back of the success of the Osborne Lights. You know, just for that three-month period of the year where tens of thousands of people per night come into this park and walk through that street and buy overpriced hot chocolate and glow-in-the-dark necklaces. I mean, that's a great revenue stream, and they don't want that to go away.
And there's no chance of them doing a an after hours hard ticket event for Osborne Lights. Osborne Nights, man, I'm telling you, like Harambe Nights.
Well, here's the thing.
Or hold on, while you think of that, they could call it the Great Christmas Light Fight Nights.
Well, you know, not to say that they aren't going to do. In fact, again, you know, supposedly that's the prize that's being dangled, if not for season 2014. Season 2015, that whoever wins the Great Christmas Light Fight then gets to decorate a section of the streets of America. You know, that adds a component to the Osborne Lights.
Nice.
The thing of Hammurabi Nights is that you know, again, you could do, you know, the Lion King on its own. I mean, again, just this year, Len, is the 20th anniversary, and, you know, there's whole arms of the company that are, you know, celebrating this. And for example, I just got a recording from Walt Disney Records. They've just released a 2-CD set of – in fact, it's the launch of a brand new series of recordings for the company, the Legacy Collection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the it's the entire score. You know, everything else that's been released to date has been, you know, just sort of what the songs were and what they felt the cuts from the album that people wanted. This is everything plus test recordings. I mean, Hans Zimmer's demos for stuff he was going to do. So that was the thing. They thought, we've retooled this theater. You know, and again, part of it was kind of, we need to be serious about recovering the cost of relocating this theater. So that people have to understand that there was a concern, you know, that there was a reason that this was done, that it was a combination of the 20th anniversary, an IP that the company still believes strongly in, the Lion King, and just coupled with the fact that we've got, you know, let's give this a shot. Let's see if this might actually work, because, you know, you and I both know that, you know, had Night Kingdom gone forward, the fifth theme park, this was the sort of thing they were going to do.
Right.
I mean, in fact, that's what kills me about, if you take the 10,000-foot view and you look at the Wild Africa Trek, you know, thing people can purchase, and this, you know, nighttime concert food event, those are both key elements of what Night Kingdom was. And it's just, you know,
idea ever goes away. It just gets recycled and repurposed.
No, it's exactly. It's just sort of like, okay, pick up the mosaic, drop it, and pull the pieces out that you think you can do quickly. So, to add to the ironies, here comes River of Light, which, again, you know, was you know, sort of, you know, kind of what they were looking to do for Night Kingdom.
Yep.
Anyway, all right. So now, if we just take a step off of Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah,
we go to the left.
Studios, we're going toward. Okay, good. Studios, right, over by Echo Lake.
Yeah, and say goodbye to Echo Lake. All right.
Really? Echo Lake goes away.
Echo Lake goes away. That's Tatooine. You're going to walk through there. In fact, the what's interesting is the only two pieces that are going to survive now that have been explained to me. You're going to see the what is it? The Hollywood and Dine commissary. That stays because, again, the character, what is it? The Disney Junior character dining experience there does very well. And, you know, they need that. That's particularly for a park that really doesn't have a whole lot of toddler appeal. That's essential.
Okay.
Indy, which was supposed to be where the Speed of Rex was going, now that Disney has gotten the rights to Indiana Jones away from Paramount, that's staying.
Really?
But another reason that's staying is they have, between corporate parties and cheerleading groups and that sort of thing, that facility is booked out through 2018, Len.
Really?
Yeah. You know, just the after-hour competitions and corporate parties. In fact, that is one of the reasons why the Great Movie Ride is going to be one of the last things redone as well, because they've got – what is it? They've got 150 events booked just for the Wizard of Oz sequence. They do a dinner in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got them booked, you know, 3 years in advance.
Yeah, 150 is one a week for 3 years.
There you go. So,
And yeah, because they charge like, I mean, those are like $20,000-$25,000 a pop. I mean, those are,
yeah, and that's found money. But you know, the people who handle corporate events for the company have basically been told, take those two elements of the inventory starting again, calendar 2017, so what, fall of 2017, something like that. I mean, they've been reaching out trying to get the ones that are the furthest out and offering, you know, them different venues at lower price points. And,
yeah, 2 years in advance you can do that. Yeah, or 3 years in advance, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how many people bite and what they can creep in from there. But you've got Tatooine. This is the area where you're going to have
So Indiana Jones stays.
Indiana Jones stays.
Hollywood and Vine stays.
Stays.
But so that's sort of like the crescent on the outside edge of Echo Lake.
Right.
How does Echo Lake go away and those things stay?
Well, basically, think if you made the turn there, you know how you can step that little side street and there's Echo Lake and there's Min and Bill's and the dinosaur and that sort of thing.
There's a little walkway around Echo Lake. Yeah.
Okay. Picture that everything is gone, except there's a string from where you're standing straight to Star Tours.
There's a street straight through there.
Yeah. I mean, so the notion is, in fact, they are. Working on, in fact, one of the beliefs about Star Tours that, in fact, that it's been some frustration for the company that when they opened the version in California, they actually did see an attendance bump. They actually did. I mean, it wasn't a particularly long attendance bump.
Yeah, but they saw it, right?
But they saw it. Whereas stateside, or at least for Florida, they didn't. They didn't. I mean,
like a couple of weeks. Yeah, maybe tops. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, honestly, the belief was that they bobbled. You know, they just didn't do a good job of positioning it as a new ride. Nobody could understand the concept of you're going on it. There are multiple destinations. It was just. It was difficult to explain.
Okay.
So now the notion is, okay, so if we create a straight street, but it's a street filled with Star Wars elements that ends at Star Tours, that, you know, that, and more to the point, you know, now that they've discovered, you know, what happens when you do, like a Star Wars parade or a Frozen parade and you have people 10 deep. On that, you need the blow off. You need, you know, a working street. So that's what they're going to do. This will be, there will be restaurants, there will be shops, there will be, they're going to move, they're moving the Jedi Academy indoors, at, the old Monster Sound Show space.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah, sounds dangerous. More interesting, in fact, I guess as a temporary hold, you know, that the you know about, you know, how Disney opted out after 5 years with American Idol.
Yeah.
This becomes part of Star Tours land.
Does it really?
Yeah. Not immediately. In fact, there has been some discussion about whether or not they should take advantage of the – because it's a much larger space – the Premier Theater where they're doing the sing-along now,
mm-hmm.
and they're turning people away. I mean, they're doing 7 and 8 shows a day there, and they're still turning people away for the sing-along. So there's been some discussion of as soon as Idol ends, moving the sing-along into there, which, you know, it then allows you to use, you know, to go
the
back
part of the park and, yeah, do construction there.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
So, the other problem right now, and again, you know, just a lot of the focus on what's going on. I mean, again, once this is all done, Star Wars will help define the identity of this park. If you want to go have the totally immersive Star Wars experience, mm-hmm. you're going to have to go to Disney Studios. the real irony of this whole thing. In fact, you know, you got to wonder if somewhere J.J. Abrams right now has a gun in his mouth. I mean, think about it. This is the guy who's laboring.
Yeah, over the next version of the next movie.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, this is the guy that introduces this Star Wars to the next generation and gets people excited, and this drives so much development at the parks and all that. And so what happens is that Marvel makes the new Star Wars movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, you know, and here's this brand new fun.
I heard of it. I heard the script was incredible.
Yeah, but what are the point? It's irreverent. It's fun. It's in that world. And here's JJ, who's got to figure out how to keep the old fans happy. Got to figure out how to bring the new fans in. Got to figure out how to make a theme park friendly. And here's Guardians making it all look easy. Yeah. You know,
kind of like completely under the radar too. I mean, a year ago, you know, who'd really heard about it other than, you know, Chris Eliopoulos and a couple of Marvel geeks, right? But you know, none.
But here, in fact, I brought up Guardians for a very specific reason, because, again, this is where it gets fascinating. Because, again, remember, Disney's got that contract, you know, where...
With Universal.
The master licensing agreement.
And, I may have heard this from someone else, but go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
Okay. Here's where it gets crazy, okay? Yeah. You know, the Disney lawyers... I mean, for example, if you go to California... You know how they've got the Guardians of the Galaxy experience at Epcot right now, right?
Guardians of the Galaxy experience at Epcot.
It's in the old Captain EO theater, isn't it?
That may not have been announced yet, Jim.
Oh, okay.
I will edit. I may or may not edit that part out.
Okay.
Guardians of the Galaxy in Epcot.
Okay. Here's the thing, all right, that one of the things, you know, that in California.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been able to show Guardians of the Galaxy in the old Honey, I Shrunk Theater. And, you know, and they've been able to take full advantage of it. They have that has the motion platform on it. And so, you know, you can get some, you know, real heft to the scenes, and you've got the sound effects. And it's like, but the weird thing is, bringing it into Florida, they can't use the motion thing, because the moment this theater
it's a
moves,
ride.
It's a ride.
Oh, sorry, this was at Studios, the preview of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah,
was
I mean,
Studios? Okay, yeah, all right, got it. Okay,
all right, so you know, and that was the thing. It was initially talked about moving it, you know, doing it in both Coast and EO, and it's like, no, you can't, we can't. All right, the moment it moves, it's a ride, and the Comcast lawyers can eat us for lunch.
Right.
So it's this fascinating parsing of, you know, what they were going to do, and, yeah, you know.
What
and
does East really mean on a round planet, Jim?
Well, what's funny is, actually, if you look at it, if you look in California, it's Marvel presenting Guardians of the Galaxy. If you look in Walt Disney World, mm-hmm, it's Walt Disney Studios. They deliberately kept the Marvel name off of it. So, I mean, it's all of these... the ridiculous, you know, parsing of what the language is. But at the same time, they're so desperate to get these characters into the parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just sort of like, you know, particularly in Florida. But it's the same.
Hmm? What would prevent, just a thought here, what would prevent Universal Studios from creating a Guardians of the Galaxy ride?
Actually, what would prevent it was that in fact,
Bob Iger has a nuclear device that he's just threatened to defy.
Well, you know, the weird thing of it is that you can actually, you can Google Marvel Universal Master Licensing Agreement. It's a 36-page document. Don't get me wrong, this is only the first document. There are multiple master documents beyond this, but this, you know, if you ever want to get a sense of what the language is and how precise it is, Google that, folks, and read through all 36 pages. It's they're very, very specific about what characters are covered, how they can be used in stores, displays, that sort of thing. And Guardians just was not on the list. You know, I mean, Guardians was so far down in the canon. In fact, that's what's kind of interesting about Big Hero 6, the Walt Disney Animation Studios thing that's coming. Same thing. It's a Marvel title, but again, one that you know, just wasn't covered. And in fact, when you understand that and you begin to see what Disney has decided to promote and what films they've agreed to let Marvel go forward through, it's fascinating. You know, just sort of like, you know, because obviously, don't get me wrong, there are there are characters that Marvel did license Universal that films are coming. I mean, for example, Doctor Strange, you know, that one's coming down the pike. But mm-hmm. but because it's one of, you know, Marvel's more famous characters. But at the same time, working the back catalog where, you know, Universal or, you know, MCA at that time didn't cut the deal back in 96. You know, that then gives them some wiggle room. And, you know, it might allow them, in fact, if you go through this crazy notion of, well, yeah, it's a Marvel character, but, you know, I mean, for example, Baymax and Hero from Big Hero 6, you know, yeah, so, you know, they were Marvel characters, but this is Disney's take on the material, and they've totally reimagined, you know, the world and the backstory. So is that really a Marvel character now?
You own the original interpretation of it, but not the one that we did.
And so that's, you know, it's gonna get really
interesting. Is a character, Jim? What is Big Hero 6?
You know, but at the same time, people should be ready for Hero and Baymax to pop up in the parks very, very quickly. They are they're not kidding around with that one. They think that this is, you know, a breakout film, a breakout character. So at least the walk around will be there very, very soon. And any amount of luck, we might see an attraction or two. But then, you know, so
I think attractions have got their place. All right. So go back to the Star Wars land, to Tatooine. Where is this street going to connect to Hollywood Boulevard?
Well, I mean, as you're walking up Hollywood Boulevard, and there's that immediate left that would take you to
Hollywood and
Dine, yeah. You know, that sort of thing. Right there, you're going to have a basically, you know, a diagonal straight that runs from that entry point. There'll be sort of a boulevard wraparound on either side, so guests, for example, can walk around between Hollywood and Dine. And you know, walk around to the Indiana Jones souvenir place and then hang and get into the stunt show. Likewise, there'll be sort of a gap between the buildings that will allow you to sort of do the straight shot to the old the American Idol place. But we're talking about a complex of buildings and alleys and side streets that you know, I mean, again, you're walking the streets here, and in fact, if they have their way, this will include sort of the Disneyfied version of the wands, the working wands for Diagon Alley in Hogwarts. This is next gen stuff. Basically, the whole notion is that as you are filling out your 6 months ahead of time what restaurant you want to eat at, and 3 months ahead of time what your what rides you want to get on, you can your child can designate whether or not they want to use the Force while they're at the studios.
Wow!
And so there'll be 10 or 15 little vignettes where, you know, for example, your child can stand on a marker and make an arm gesture and, you know, lift up heavy crates or open a door or disarm somebody. And it evidently, as part of the playtest for this, there was a, you know, if your kid wants to be part of the dark side, we could talk about this. You know,
really?
Yes. So you could do the Far Force or do the dark side. Because, again, evidently that's part of the whole Jedi Academy thing, that every so often they'll have a kid who, you know, wants to join up with Darth Vader. So it's like, all right, let's get 10 or 15 of those set aside just for that kid.
It'll be the little choking thing that Darth does at the beginning of Episode 4, but they just bring out Disney interns. Steve! Yeah, Boston College, 3.8 GPA. Fantastic. Come over here. All right, so that's going to be – all right, let's say it's the Star Wars Tatooine neighborhood. What are they doing for rides?
Well, and again, coming back to A, B, and C stuff. Okay, for example, there's going to be a spinner. You know, I mean, there will be an X-Wing, you know, for lack of a better term, it's a Dumbo ride. You know, you're climbing that, you know, lift it up, and, you know, it will not only go up and down, but you'll also have a button in there that will open the X-Wings. All right, so that'll be part of it. Okay. You're going to keep Star Tours where it is. You're going to have a you know, the cantina. In fact, that's what's been kind of interesting is on the backs of the obvious success of Diagon Alley.
Yeah.
That there was this conversation about 4 or 5 weeks ago where they looked at everything that they were doing for Star Wars. And let me stress here that they are California's Star Wars and Walt Disney World Star Wars are being developed at the exact same time, and that they're trying to take advantage of some of the technologies and some of the ideas and, you know, sort of getting the most bang out of the buck. But they looked at what had been done for Diagon Alley and how people were reacting to it. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that this was a project for Florida that, I mean, think about it. You spent $400 million.
So you spent?
Well, $350 to $400 million, depending on who you talk to, for New Fantasyland total. And that's including, you know, the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
So Seven Dwarfs, Enchanted Tales with Belle. The, right. Okay. All right, fair enough.
You're spending $600 on, you know, Pandora, okay?
And so there's $1 billion right there.
Okay. So they were thinking, okay, so what we're talking about for Star Wars and to reimagine this park, we're going to probably spend seven. And, you know, and then
– $700 million.
$700 million.
How much – the park didn't cost that much to build.
No. The park
– So it really is a DCA in that way.
Well, here's where it gets crazy. You know, the Imagineers were finally able to get in the Diagon Alley and see how tall the buildings were and how big the theming was, and they went back to management, and management went to the board, and they just threw another $100 to $150 million to the project, just with the notion of we have to up the scale.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense. Diagon Alley is incredible.
It is. But, you know, part of the problem is there is no Hogwarts Express, which would get kind of the irony of this whole thing is that, you know, I mean, and part of it is because Gringotts still isn't operating at full efficiency. In fact, depending on who you talk to, it could well be 6 months to a year till they're finally running at full efficiency with that. It's just, I mean, the whole attraction is a science project.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's like the old game Mousetrap.
Yeah.
Like you fall from the beginning of it, there's you stop, you go, there's stuff tumbling, it's all... Yeah.
And it just that so much of it is cutting-edge technology.
The funny thing is like, nobody's complaining about it. I mean, like, you hear, like, yeah, it's a 3-hour line or a 5-hour line or whatever, and it's only running at half capacity, but everything else is so amazing, they've essentially bought themselves time.
No, that's it exactly. And you know, and once that actually does get up and running at full capacity, and that means that every guest that goes to that park that day can at least get a single ride on Gringotts, you know, that's and coupled with the fact that anybody who wants to ride the Hogwarts Express gets to do it, and they can do the you know, experience coming and going.
Yep.
It's just, and that one's such a smash hit straight out of the box. Oh, by the way, if you heard about, the hidden Voldemort?
No, on the train?
On the train.
No, where is it?
Okay. You are coming back from Hogsmeade Village, and you are going to, you know, to the King's Cross Station.
Mm-hmm.
You may notice when you're passing through the countryside, you see this weird sort of estate, and that is the Malfoy Mansion.
Yep.
All right.
And it's always raining or something there?
Yeah. Okay. As you're going back, keep an eye out for – there's a tree in the foreground.
Yep.
There's a lightning strike. During the lightning strike – you actually get to see Voldemort. The tree changes into Voldemort, and he's actually doing the pose from the end of the Deathly Hallows Part 1, where he's got Dumbledore's wand, and he's holding up to the heavens, and the lightning strikes down. But again, no hidden Mickey, hidden Voldemorts.
That's awesome.
So, you know, just next time you ride the train, keep an eye out for that.
All right, next week.
Okay. All right, going forward here, so part of the problem is Star Wars doesn't have a people eater.
Yeah, you know, there's no real, like, you know, 2,000, 3,000 people an hour ride. I mean, it's not going to be a boat ride through Ewok Land, is it?
No, no. And in fact, it's interesting, doubling back on James Cameron's, I keep using the old name, Pandora Land of Avatar.
Yeah.
It looks like they're actually going to pull a new Fantasyland with this. This may open with one attraction, and then 18 months later, the boat ride will come online.
Avatar might open with one ride in 2017?
The notion is that, you know, and some of this is supposedly a deliberate choice. You know, the whole idea is that people will come down for the first thing, and it's
they'll come back for the second one 2 years later.
There you go. There you go.
That's a risk, man.
It is. It is. You know, and
if they don't get it right, then when the second one opens, people are like, yeah, whatever.
Well, that's the argument. In fact, right now it's weird that you have a very confident WDI that's done Mystic Manor, that's done the Ratatouille ride, and that feels like, you know, we have something to prove. We have to grab the higher ground with the studios.
And that's what I think too. I think they need to do something that. If they just do something that's the same as Diagon Alley, hey, here's a very detailed land, mm-hmm. you know, one big ride, one medium-sized ride, and we may open something up later. All they're showing is essentially we can do what Universal's doing. That's not good.
And part of the problem here is, I mean, take, for example, what Universal is doing with Kong. Everybody's making the mistake of looking at what they're building, Project 340, and thinking, okay, what you're doing is you're taking the attraction, you know, the Kong, King Kong 360 thing that they added to their tram tour 3 or 4 years ago.
In Hong.
And it's like, and this isn't that.
No, I heard it's not. Yeah.
No, it's that much more ambitious. You're talking giant AA figures. You're talking dimensional sets and a 3D film element. I mean, this is a full blown attraction. And the weird thing of it is depending on who you talk to, it's not a coincidence that this is being built right at the edge of Cartoon Lagoon, which, if Universal has its way, will then become the Lord of the Rings land, you know, just sort of the notion of showing Peter Jackson, like, look, we're not kidding. You know, we can take your IPs and, you know, look, we did good stuff in California. We're doing great stuff in Florida. You know, just sign the goddamn contract and let's get Lord of the Rings. You know, but, you know, again, Peter is still holding off to see. In fact, it's what the Battle of the Five Armies comes out in December. And depending on what the gross of that is, it's. You know, then we finally.
Oh, really? He's using that as negotiating tactic?
Well, that's, you know, it's just with Peter, it just comes, you know, we come to the end and it's like, well, it made this much money. You know, so that then determines what the value is for a theme park attraction or, you know, that's, in fact, to give you some idea of how long, you know, Universal has been chasing these rights. I mean, they were, you know, the original agreement was when they finished making Lord of the Rings. It's like, hang on to the props, hang on to the costumes, you know, we'll use them there. And, you know, but then it stalled out over money. And now, in fact, that's the most interesting thing about Universal right now. Then this comes straight from Tom Williams, the chairman and CEO of the parks there. He talked about how they had to go out and get Potter. And it wasn't a question of, you know, the Disney dropped the ball and the rights were available. They still had to go out and close the deal. They really had to work hard. They built models. They wooed the people at Warner's, who then held open the door for J.K. Rowling, and they had to close the deal with her. It was a lot of work. All right. Now, on the back of what Potter's doing,
mm-hmm.
people are coming to Universal with their IPs. I mean, it's just the notion of,
really,
you guys do great work. How would you like to have our sets of characters? And, wow. You know, that's kind of unheard of in this business that, you know, and Disney, you know, thankfully is sort of an IP creating factory. And, or if it, when it isn't, it buys a Lucasfilm, it buys a Marvel, it buys a Pixar, and it then has these characters to pull for the parks. But, you know, for the first time ever, it's not a question of, well, we want to go into the theme parks, let's start with Disney. It's like, well, we want to go into theme parks, let's call those nice people at Universal. They did some very interesting stuff. So, It's, you know, again, I guess the thing to stress here, Len, is that the next 5 years or so, it's going to be fascinating. It just, we are in, for lack of a better term, an arms race.
That's great, though.
It is. I mean, for us, it's wonderful. You know, for people who enjoy theme parks and themed entertainment, it's going to be amazing. I mean, and just the notion, again, if what I just heard was true, Universal is thinking about building $250 million water park. Just a water park.
$250 million on a water park. That's fantastic.
On a water park. You know, and so.
But I mean, look, the funny thing is about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Blizzard Beach and I think Blizzard Beach and Typhoon Lagoon are the two best water parks in Orlando. But Universal can look at what SeaWorld did with Aquatica.
Yep.
And say whatever they spent on that, was $50 million or whatever, $35 million, whatever, was far too little because no one Aquatica is not a destination. It's got some interesting elements in it, but it's not heavily themed. It's not drawing people over to that side of the park, and it's certainly not the kind of thing where you would say, oh my gosh, that's a great water park. Maybe we should give the theme parks a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. That and just from a point of view of think about it, you're already in a situation where. You know, because of Diagon Alley and you know, people are honestly thinking, you know, they used to give a day to Universal, especially after Potter. Now they have to think two.
Oh, and easy, yeah. And if you want to hang out in Diagon Alley, it's really 3 days because you want one the entire day just for that.
And think about it. If you open this giant killer water park, you know, $250 million water park, and what – that suggests, you know, the level of attractions and, you know, that sort of thing. That's day four.
Yeah.
And that honestly is what finally lit the fire under Disney's ass. All right. It's just the notion of, you know, Comcast. They kept thinking, you know, well, Comcast is eventually going to turn off the money fire hose. And it's like, no, they went out and got another hose.
called in a backup truck.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got – I mean, the thing with Universal, too, they're – Their one-day tickets are the same as Disney's, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But their 2-, 3-, and 4-day tickets and their annual passes are roughly half the cost of Disney's.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, Disney's got to be looking at that saying, you know, here's somebody who's building comparable attractions, right, with comparable – I mean, I've even been to the new restaurants in CityWalk, but they're amazing. Or maybe you have. But, like, you know, so they're building out the restaurants. They're building out the rides. They're building out the hotels. You know, all of a sudden it's, you know, it's 4 days for half the cost. Of what's at Disney. That's got to be the thing where it's like, that's got to keep them up at night. There's going to be night sweats there.
Yeah, and that coupled with, you know, that they learned they've got such a good relationship going now with NBC that, you know, for example, you know, Tom Lee was bragging about how, you know, if you wanted to talk Al Roker, he's got him on speed dial. You know, that or Jimmy Fallon loved the whole thing of going down there for Diagon Alley, and so they're looking to make it an annual event
to
bring the Tonight Show back there. And, you know, so you and think about how everyone who had Comcast in their home got information down the straight pipe about Diagon Alley. Next year's the 25th anniversary of Universal Orlando.
Oh, nice.
You know, and so they're going to hit that hard. And then behind this will be hotel number 5 and the water park. And evidently getting new attractions, new experiences for all of the parks. And again, ultimately, this is what finally made Disney decide, okay, we've fixed the kingdom. In fact, my understanding is they will have all of the, what is it, the back street, the blow through.
The arcades, on, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be up and running. And then it's a question of, okay, so we get our new nighttime show into Epcot, so that gives people an excuse to go back over there. We have we replace Maelstrom with Frozen, which gives people, you know, families a reason to go visit Epcot. You know, and Avatar, you know, that freshens that park, that extends our day there. So that was the thing. It just it again, the eye of Sauron then turned on the studios, and it's like, all right, let's fix it. Let's turn this into a theme park. Let's just admit it. We're never going to shoot another movie here.
Yeah.
We're, you know, we'll do some television, and it's just we have all of this space. We have all of this facilities. Let's full-blown park. So, but just understand that we are talking a 5 year plus build. Because again, that there's resources that have already been allocated for what's going into Epcot, what's going into Animal Kingdom. So
yeah, they've only got so many people, so many creative people, right? They can pull it off.
That's it exactly. So Star Wars lands first, then further change outs. So all with an eye toward, you know, when this is all finally done and everything is repositioned and buffed up and that sort of thing, then begins the march to the 50th anniversary. And, you know, I mean, it's funny to talk about something that really is 2021.
Yeah, 7 years. No, they've really got to start moving on it. I mean,
That's exactly.
They've got maybe a year, two at the outside to start, you know, to plan it. But, you know, if they're not in full-blown construction mode, the way that you know, it takes 5 years for these projects, I mean, if they're not in full-blown construction mode by the beginning of 2016, then you got to wonder what's going to be done before 2021.
Yeah. And in between that period, you have heard about this DVC changeout thing as well, right?
I've heard a couple of really interesting things about the DVC changeout. Go ahead. What's the property?
Well, property number one is supposed to be Wilderness Lodge.
That's what I heard. Oh, the whole thing's going to DVC, I heard.
Yeah. Well, not the whole thing. They're going to
do it
pull
in the building, like
300 to 400 rooms. You know, it's going to be kind of the Animal Kingdom Lodge idea. You take floors and change them out. Well, you know, look, you and I both know from on-site attendance levels that Disney radically overbuilt. You know, and they know that now. But at the same time, in order to, you know, there are two ways to handle this. One is to admit, okay, we overbuilt, and to lower prices for on-property rooms so they're that much more competitive, what's out there in iDrive and 192. And
I think they would rather carve one eye out with a spoon.
That's it exactly. So yeah. What they're going to do instead is it's DVC. It's taking floors of buildings and, you know, taking rooms out of the inventory, because DVC is still doing amazing. I just can't understand how that plate continues to spin. But
yeah, I know, right? And especially because the resale market is a fraction of, I mean, the cost of DVC and the resale market are a fraction of what the retail sales are, the original retail price. So the thing with Wilderness Lodge, though, turning that into DVC, that does a number of helpful things for Disney. Number one, it reduces their overall room inventory, because you're combining, you know, a standard room becomes a studio, but, you know, two rooms become a one bedroom and three rooms become a two bedroom and, you know, four rooms become a grand villa or whatever they want to do with it, right? So they can take a huge chunk of inventory out of Wilderness Lodge and get money for it on DVC, right?
Yeah, and at the same time, I mean, it's just, the other thing that concerns me about this is that, you know, for example, they're looking at what they did, or they're under construction right now, that the waterfront cottages
at
the Pali, and there's supposedly a set, depending on who you talk to, it's 10 or 16 of these waterfront honeymoon cottage things that, ironically enough, were actually part of the original plan for both the Grand Floridian and, you know, back in the day when it was, you know, it wasn't called Wilderness Lodge. It was going to be called Cypress Point.
Mm-hmm. They're going to do overwater cottages.
Well, I mean, just little waterfront cottages that had, you know, sort of like a porch out of the water screened in. So, you can enjoy the view and, you know, that sort of thing. But they were going to be pitched as, this is where if you were having your honeymoon or that sort of thing, they were just remote enough, you know, that, you know, you had your privacy, but you had your themed environment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in fact, that's what's kind of ironic. Again, this was pitched. I remember reading Dick Nunes's speech about this. He was talking about this 6 months before Epcot opened.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it was the notion of, okay, we finish Epcot, and this is our next project. We have Cypress Point, and we have the Grand Floridian, and, you know, among these, both hotels will feature, you know, beachfront cottages. So I guess, again, that's also part of this 7-year march toward the anniversary. That they the long view is to, you know, just bite the bullet, do the course correction, you know, not only get the parks adjusted so, you know, that they are genuinely competitive again, but also adjust the room inventory so you're not dealing with this. You know, I was reading someplace where it's actually there are times now where it's 65 to 75% of the rooms on property are full. You know, and they jigger those numbers by shutting down hotels and doing quote unquote rehabs.
They'll shut down like an entire 3-building set at one of the All Star resorts.
Yeah,
for soft good refurbishment or something.
There you go, and it's a an artificial way to play with the numbers, but it's just the problem is the folks in Burbank who've you can only do that trick so many times, and they finally cut on, and it's like, look, we need to do something about this.
Well, the other thing about with converting stuff over to DVC is what's the metric revenue per guest per night? Revenue per capita per night, or something like that. That's one of those metrics. But if you, so one way to grow that number, right, is to get people to spend more. But the other one is to sort of reduce your denominator, reduce the number of rooms that you have.
This is all about, in a weird sort of way, improving Disney margins. Whether it's per room spending, or how many nights they stay, or that sort of thing. And again, to take an asset that you already have and changing it over to a DVC and having that much more inventory to offer to folks. And again, at the same time, picking the hotels that people aspire to stay to. And again, Grand Flow. In fact, that to me is kind of bizarre to have just built a brand new villa and yet be looking at pulling a couple of floors out of the inventory at the Flow, but that's supposedly being considered as well.
So they would pull out of the main building because there's only like 3-4 floors on the main building, and they're all concierge anyway. They're going to turn those into DVCs.
That just gives you some idea in fact, that's what's been genuinely weird about what's happened since 2008. People are still coming to Disney, but they're not necessarily ponying up to stay at the Grand Flow or the Wilderness Lodge anymore. You know, if they've done it in the past, the weird thing is the one hotel that seems to hold people. In fact, that's the real irony of all this construction that's going on at the Poly. That one has, I can't quite understand it, but that has this ridiculous retention level that people who have stayed at the Poly previously just, that becomes their hotel. They have to go back there. And, you know, and when you think about what the price was in the 70s versus what a room night there is now, and they're still paying it.
Yeah.
You know.
It was like $20-some a night, something like that. Something crazy.
Don't even talk about
it. Yeah, it's not even a tax on a room now.
So, anyway, long story short, folks, it just, they smell the coffee now. All right, that they understand what they need to do, and particularly with the studio, and it's all about just becoming that much more competitive in a market that just in the past 5 years has gotten much more competitive for Disney. I mean, just the 4% market share that they've lost since Hogsmeade opened.
Really, 4%? They've lost that much?
If the Sentinel did an article, I want to say Universal went from 7% market share to 21%, and Disney saw, a similar erosion. That was a wake-up call. And now coupled with what they've seen numbers-wise coming out of Diagon Alley, it's just like, this is not a drill,
fantastic.
And when they get – again, I apologize. I know I had to be fairly vague here, but again, the problem is my sources on a lot of this stuff, these are very, very small teams.
Yeah, one of like 5 people that know this.
Yeah, and in fact, honestly, talking – I mean, I had to talk in generalities because if I got specific, it then would be very clear of who I'd spoken with about this or the people I've spoken with. And it's we win.
Especially when the team is small enough that you could put them all in a room and beat them with rubber hoses until one.
Well, that's probably will start on Monday. But anyway, so just you know, just be ready. And again, from the fanboy side of the street, when you hear the announced changes for the studio, I guarantee you that there will be some pushback. But it's the smart play. It's the smart way to go with the studio. It will, when it's all done, be a full day park again. You won't have people going to the studio and leaving at 3 in the afternoon. I mean, it's kind of the same thing as what they're doing with Animal Kingdom. The whole goal there is to make that a full day park, and have people want to hang on long enough so they can see Rivers of Light or wander through Pandora with all of the bioluminescence. So just, you know, you got to think on a global scale. Okay, you got to think that
big,
you know,
think big.
Yeah, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, just that if you can think in a ecological clock kind of way, 7 years will pass relatively quickly.
on the geologic scale,
there you
seven
go.
Years
right.
is nothing.
That's right. It's going to be wonderful when it's done, and we'll all enjoy
your children. Your children, if not them, their grandchildren,
yeah,
will love this park. Oh, you should live so long. Anyway.
So there you go.
All right. Well, if you'd like to hear more from Jim and I, and especially live, Jim and I, along with Mike Newell of Mouse World Radio, will be in New York October 26th, Jim? 2014?
That's my understanding that's we're actually going to be there in Flushing Meadow. We're doing a live show and talking about, in fact, speaking of 50th anniversaries, this is the 50th anniversary of the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair, and we're going to talk about all the stuff that Disney did there and how that impacted the company and fun behind-the-scenes stories. And
it's going to be great. There'll be videos.
And pasta.
Talks.
And pasta.
And there'll be food. Go to etccustomevents.com/experiences to get more information on that. And go ahead and book. It's relatively inexpensive. Fun with three fun people plus food in Flushing Meadows. I mean, nothing says fun like you, me, Mike Newell in Queens, New York, right?
Actually, I was happy that we didn't go with the nothing says fun like Flushing.
Look forward to
that. On that note.
All right. So don't forget, this has been the Unofficial Guide to Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Please go into iTunes and rate us. Let us know what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care.
All right, a couple of footnotes for the show. The opening song was The Ballad of Fiedler and Munt by Disparition. You can download their music at disparition.bandcamp.com. Today's opening adapts the song lyrics from the Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime to the style of the Welcome to Night Vale podcast, which is, of course, written by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner. If you haven't listened to it on iTunes, it's hysterical. They're also doing a series of live shows. They've got some fabulous memorabilia that's available for sale on their website, commonplacebooks.com. You should download and listen to their shows immediately, right now. Go. Thanks. Bye.